Captain, join us.
Kevin Julian, Penobscot Bay, River Pilots. Hope you can hear me. A couple of questions for the panel, starting with Mr. Miller. Particular Islesboro concerns dredging issue, which I won't go into too much because we shut that issue down for a later date, but I do want to address what was brought up. Mr. Miller, you made a statement about a report saying that the dredged basin as it is now is inadequate for existing and future vessel traffic. Is that right?
That was a quote from the Army Corps of Engineers report of 2007, correct.
Were you aware that the reason for that statement or one of the contributing factors was because of the industry's change now towards a 10% of draft under keel clearance standard instead of a minor standard or lesser standard such as 2 feet?
I do understand that there is a movement in that direction to 10%, which would mean what, about close to 4 feet under a 39.7 foot
correct.
Measure.
Instead of 2 feet, it'd be 4 feet. That's correct. And you said you recently learned about the underkeel clearance standards for Penobscot Bay?
They are currently, three out below, beyond
right.
Drillhead 2 and then 1, yeah.
And would you be surprised to learn that those have been in effect for 15 years now?
Not at all.
Okay. Now, you mentioned the dock. You said 34.9 feet alongside the pier?
Yeah, correct.
And that's from the Army Corps of Engineers?
Correct.
The Army Corps of Engineers isn't responsible for sounding docks. The dock owner is responsible for that. The Army Corps just sounds their channels.
They do provide sound data, that's correct, depth data.
Now, I'm just curious because 2 days ago when we were at this meeting, there was a ship growing 38 and a half feet that docked at the dock you're talking about right now, and it's still sitting safely afloat.
There are different depths, as you would see. Grab a copy of our transcript or our material on your way by that box right there, Dave, and take a look at the exhibit from the Army Corps of Engineers. You will notice that there are different depths through there, but rarely is there a depth that's 40.7 on that entire side. But there are places where there are only 34.7 feet of depth where the tanker would be.
I'm just having a hard time understanding how it is we've been bringing ships in routinely of 38 and a half feet for the last 2 months.
Talk to the Army Corps of Engineers. That's the sounding depth, and I'm sure that they would stand by that material.
Let's not argue about this point. Obviously, there's a difference of opinion. We agree to differ.
Okay, very good. Shellfish Warden, Mr. Coombs?
Yes.
Do most of the fishermen out on the island have chart plotters and GPSs and things?
Most of them do.
Yeah. And so they know the location of the shipping route there, the traffic lane?
Yeah.
And is there any reason why the 4 to 6 or whatever it ends up being, if it ever happens at all, those particular LPG tankers would have any more or less effect on the fishing gear than a normal increase in tanker or freighter traffic?
On the gear, it probably wouldn't have that much effect. I think the exclusion zone would be more of an effect than anything. If you're out there fishing and have to go ashore, which the zone actually touches Islesboro at points, so you would literally have to go ashore and not be able to tend your gear.
Right.
You know, you can't, you know, you gotta pick your days when you fish.
So a smaller exclusion zone, one that didn't go to the shore, but one that still encompassed the recommended route, would be satisfactory?
If you're talking a mile from a boat, you're not going to have much of a zone to fish in.
Yeah, the mile was ahead, but I'm thinking more to the sides of the vessel, which I think of the Coast Guard LOR has stated 3,000 feet roughly, which is...
Let's keep this to the economic issue of gear and stuff.
Even so, it's the same thing. We have the effect now. Not all the tankers stay exactly in the channel, and they tend to drag gear. And you know, there's a chance of anything could happen there.
So you don't see the tankers go outside of the channel?
They go side to side. I mean, they're not always in the same path every time.
Uh-huh. You know the traffic lane is 0.4 mile wide, correct?
Right. Okay. Right.
Thanks very much, Mr. Coombs.
Thank you.
Mr. Boardman, you mentioned your two passenger carrying vessels, the Quicksilver and the Little Dipper.
Yes, sir.
Do either of those vessels have AIS units aboard? Automatic information systems aboard where they can see approaching ships?
Yes.
That's the yes they have them?
Yes, they have them.
Okay, so they could see any tanker that's coming up, regardless if it's an LPG tanker, a freighter, or regular chemical tanker?
Correct.
Okay. How fast do those vessels go, roughly?
Oh, 15 knots, probably.
15 knots. So a security zone that was a half a mile behind any ship, regardless if it was LPG or any other kind of ship, they could pretty quickly maneuver around that, couldn't they?
If you say so.
Well, it's your boat. I mean, I'm driving.
I'm not driving. I'm not the skipper of it. I manage it. And like the chairman, probably, I got a little protein deficiency at this hour of the night. I'm not that quick.
Okay.
Birthdays have something to do with that too, but I wonder where you're going with this, Dave.
Where I'm going with the chairman is that I've heard about these significant time delays, and I'm just having a hard time understanding it because already right now, as the bay functions, I've had the Quicksilver on numerous occasions come out and pass well underneath the stern of tankers. I've had the State Ferries come out and pass well under the stern of tankers. I really am having a hard time grasping this argument that this is going to have a huge time delay on any vessels.
And the part that we have is that this board doesn't have a jurisdiction on that passing part of it. We will look at the economic impact that it has on people on the bay,
right,
as they derive their livelihood.
Okay.
But this other part comes down to the safety issue, which may come in and another one. But we don't have any say.
Right.
And be quite frank, not being cavalier about this, but we don't care what that exclusion zone is, because from our end, we don't get to vote on it.
Okay.
We have no input. We have nothing to do. It's in there. It's a consideration.
Somehow I don't think that's going to stop us from speaking about it further.
No, I don't think so, but it is tonight.
Well, speaking of safety, I have one or two quick questions for Ms. Wood. You mentioned the emergency, the need for the ferry to get up in a hurry and go and bring people to the mainland in the event of an emergency.
That's correct.
Why wouldn't the, or couldn't the captain of the ferry, they do have AIS, by the way, why couldn't they call an approaching inbound tanker, again, any tanker, it doesn't have to be an LPG, it could be the tankers that are out there right now. Why can't they just call up on the radio, state that they have an emergency, they need to cross the head of the tanker so the tanker can either slow down or maybe even change course or pull a U-turn? Why couldn't they do that to allow the ferry to go in an expedient fashion to the mainland?
Because strange things happen. Because the timing may be wrong. Because emergencies happen when they happen, and we can never predict.
Yeah.
So it just happened at the exact wrong time.
So you've had the emergency, and you're taking care of the person, but once they're on the ferry has to back out of the pen, they have to start the engine, they have to back out of the pen, they have to come out of the channel to head west to the mainland. What's to prevent them from calling the captain of that vessel from calling an approaching vessel, stating he has an emergency, and asking an approaching vessel to slow down, stop, or turn around?
My understanding is it's at least a mile in front and a mile behind,
right,
and a mile on either side. We're not allowed to enter the waters.
Right, but if they called sometime prior to even being near Grindle Point, they could do this. They could call the arriving ship and they could stop it or turn it around.
I'm going to respond to that. Otherwise, we're getting a subject matter here that we're asking a medical person navigational things.
That's right.
And so we're getting away from the economic impact of it. You know, we're not doing safety tonight, but we are.
Well,
I'll respond.
Two different views of safety.
I'll respond to this. Could it be that the ferry trying to get a hold of the tanker, there might be a delay?
A delay of getting hold of the tanker?
Well, you know, communications delay.
Channels 16 and 13 are regularly monitored. I don't think they'd have a hard time getting in touch with it.
Well, could it happen?
No, I don't think it could.
Not at all?
No, I don't think it could. I have one last question for the panel, Mr. Miller. You mentioned earlier in your testimony that you worked on the Sears Island Planning Initiative.
Correct.
If I have my draft copy of that, I don't know that I have